This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim and myself in the studio this morning. It is 7:07 a.m. and we're going to take a look in the markets in just a little bit. But in 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Tatasri M. Ramachalvam, the co-chairperson of the Bar Council of for Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs Committee on Malaysia's decision to deport asylum seekers from Myanmar. But before that, let's take a look at the markets, Noel.
Yeah, so in the U.S., equities reversed losses on the back of Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's assurance that the central bank will continue to support the economy. Also, President Biden has signed an executive order directing federal agencies to conduct a review of supply chains for some critical goods like the semiconductor chips, as well as pharmaceutical and large capacity batteries. So the Dow closed up 1.4%, S&P 500 closed up 1.1%, NASDAQ closed up 1%.
After a few days in the red there, particularly the NASDAQ saw a bit of a correction earlier this week. Green day over in the US, but that can't be said over for Asia because if you take a look, Japan's Nikkei 225 closed down 1.6% yesterday. Shanghai Composite closed down 2%, and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed down 3%, and this was on the back of the budget announcement, which included a stamp duty on equity trade for the first time in nearly three decades, an increase of the stamp duty from 0.1% to 0.13%. The Singapore STI bucked the trend, though, for the region. It was up 1.2%, and the FBM KLCI was down 0.5%. Now, for more on global markets, we're speaking to Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and a very good morning to you. Let's talk about the Fed and Jerome Powell. Did his comments last night or yesterday early morning go far enough in addressing reflation concerns about the U.S. economy?
Yes, I think he made two things clear. One is I think he did allude to the fact that they are fairly optimistic in so far that they expect policy to work. So the entire reflation trade that is. A slight pickup in bond yields as well as a pickup in commodity prices on forward-looking optimism from where we are. That continued on, but he managed to dissociate the reflation, which is the stimulus from the policy, from subsequent policy response, which is the tightening. So he has given markets enough space to think that even if commodity prices rise and bond yields pick up a little bit, the Fed will remain very accommodative, pumping in money in the economy and keeping interest rates very low for prolonged periods, which is what revived the bullish sentiments on markets. The tricky part would be to reassociate these two and assess the economy and policy at some point down the road.
Well, the Fed and ECB are not expected to raise interest rates so soon. Are there central banks in this region who might raise interest rates this year?
This year, I think we can almost, put a blanket waiver on it and say, look, no one's going to raise interest rates. But interestingly, some central banks are beginning to look a little beyond. One example is the RBNZ. And so New Zealand Central Bank may now be required to take the housing market into the context of policy making. So that's to say, some of this ultra-easy policy that's led to asset market bubbles, some central banks are now beginning to say we need to look at that as well. So that makes for a very interesting landscape when we go into 2022 to 2023-4. So we'll see what happens then.
And what about Australia?
I think in Australia's case, the challenge really is twofold for the RBA. I think Australia's better footing and the commodity boom that we, or the beginnings of a commodity boom that we're beginning to see now means that Australia the RBA can stop easing aggressively fairly soon. But at the same time, the Aussie dollar is also getting very strong, and so the RBA's dilemma is to calibrate policy according to whether or to calibrate policy according to the economy or to keep it ultra easy to offset the rise in the Aussie dollar. So this is the thing that I think the RBA will have to struggle with, but they are further away rather than nearer tightening as a response to the economy because of the strong Aussie dollar.
Vishnu, Hong Kong released its 2021-2022 budget yesterday. Do you think the proposed measures go far enough in reviving their pandemic-affected economy, especially considering their own fiscal constraints?
I think they do. Just that's the very short version. And I think we can take the FAR quite literally, actually, in the time sense, because what the budget has done, and you bring a very good point, Roshan, which is budget constraints that we run into in trying to stimulate the economy. So that's the reason why they've scaled back on the one-off sweeteners and goodies. Yet there's enough in short term. So each Hong Kong dollar resident gets $5,000 to go on a spending spree. That's for the near term. But they've also spent on development expenditure. So all this infrastructure expenditure that's going to carry forward and hopefully have positive multipliers for longer. And they're also opening up their financial sector, particularly with green bonds. So they're trying to put in the sustainable and self-sustaining growth into the mix of the budget rather than bleeding cash every year, which is why in every sense it goes further than just this year.
One measure that they employed here to kind of raise some revenues was the hike in the stamp duty for stock trades. Any thoughts on that?
I think the market reaction is just an illustration of exactly how free market Hong Kong is to react to 300th of a percentage point. And Hong Kong remains a jurisdiction in which it is very, very low cost of transaction. But I think the fear is this may become par for the course and you may get more of this. So I think the reaction should be taken in the context of the unexpectedness of it and exactly how free it is, the extreme low cost of Hong Kong. So I don't see it damaging Hong Kong in a very big way, especially when you've got offsetting measures in other aspects of the financial market.
Well, let's take a look at Singapore, where you are at. Singapore's economy is expected to grow between 4-6% in 2021. What's your sense on the ground? Is it like back to normal? Are people returning to the offices? I mean, when I see some reports, it seems like still a high percentage of people are still working from home. So what's your sense? Is it, as vibrant as it used to be?
I think the growth numbers, the first thing we need to take note of them is, yes, we will see stronger growth this year in a very real sense, because not just Singapore, every country has learned how to adapt to and deal with some of these adverse shocks rather than going into a complete lockdown. So just by virtue of that, we should see activity recovering. There's also the base effect. We've had a very bad 2020, so growth at 4-6% is not really champagne popping growth. It is partly base effects, and at the margin, I think what's happening is the opening up efforts and the return to so-called normalcy, if we can remember what it is a gradual process and a very guarded one, bearing in mind that right now we are in a junction of the vaccine racing against new strains of virus. So it's probably going to be a case of much more emphatic opening up, fingers crossed, in the second half of the year, which I think is the main game plan for most countries.
Vishnu, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy over at Mizuho Bank, breaking down for us both his thoughts on the Fed's, Jerome Powell, the chairperson of the Fed's comments last night, or early yesterday morning actually, as well as the Hong Kong budget and the reaction that the market had to the stamp duty hike there.
Yeah, so I think in Hong Kong, they are addressing the immediate concerns like fighting the pandemic and ensuring the vaccination goes as progressed, as planned, and also still looking ahead, like with the green bonds. And of course, the stamp duty, I mean, it's a 30-year wait, right? So I think the hike is probably due.
Now let's talk about some corporate stories here. We've got one out of the ride-hailing scene. So according to a Bloomberg source story here, Chinese ride-hailing giant Didi Xing plans to enter Western Europe and potentially includes markets like the UK, France and Germany by the first half of this year. They're looking for new areas for growth. Now that momentum is starting to slow down in China, where it is the dominant player. It ousted Uber back in 2016.
Yeah, so watch out, right, players in Europe. So Didi is also a SoftBank-backed company, already operates in 13 countries, mostly in Latin America, but also Russia. And they are also considering other offerings like food delivery and running errands as well, depending on the local market demand. And I suppose also depending on regulatory requirements.
Yep, on that note, it's worth noting that last week, the UK Supreme Court ruled that Uber must treat its drivers as workers, entitling them to holiday pay, rest breaks, breaks and minimum wage while using the app. Other European countries are also working on ways to tax the tech platforms overall. And I think Uber did have Uber was already kind of prepared for this. They kind of had a reaction to it. And I mean, right now, just for the UK, whether it applies overall, we'll have to wait and see. But right now, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, we'll be taking a look at Malaysia's decision to deport asylum seekers from Myanmar. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.